welcome to yet another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. I am joined, as always, by fellow co-editor John Troopin. John, how are you?
Doing all right. Good. Much better straits than I expected to be in. Baseball-wise,
yes.
Talking to you today.
Surprisingly, when we said we'll do a podcast after the opening series against the Red Sox, I did not anticipate to be sitting here with such ebullience in my
heart.
Yeah,
I thought it would be a very, like, so, the West Virginia Power announced their lineup today.
Yes. Joining us also is staff writer Matthew Roberson. Matthew, how are you?
I'm good. We're recording in the morning, which is a change of pace. I feel like, what's old girl's name from the Today Show who's always like kind of day drunk? Hoda?
Kathy Lee and Hoda?
Yeah, I feel like Kathy Lee and Hoda, where like I have this mug in front of me and no one knows if it's coffee or wine. So.
Yes, That Irish coffee for sure.
Yeah, that's the energy I'm bringing to today's podcast. I love it. The sun is out. The Mariners are the best team in the American League.
In baseball. Well, I guess the Phillies maybe
are
undefeated.
Well, there's winning percentages. Yeah, some teams are undefeated, but we've played the most. So, yeah, we're probably the best team
ever assembled. The winningest team. Yeah.
The winningest team ever assembled. Avengers assembled.
I saw someone do the Spider-Man meme, and it was like the 1927 Yankees meeting the 2019 Mariners.
Yeah, this is big fun. More big fun than I think any of us anticipated. So let's go ahead and run down the opening series. Some things should we go for the good and then the bad and then the ugly, or should we go for the good, the better, and the ugly? What do you think?
I'm curious to hear what the ugly is because there's not a lot. I say we start with the ugly from you, Kate.
Oh, I think we all know what the ugly is.
Well,
the ugly comes out at night, as it were.
I don't want to pile on maybe someone who is in a tough position already. So if that's what we're getting at, I mean, Dylan Moore was the ugly of the Red Sox series.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah. Maybe the errors are uglier than the bullpen. What's worse, the errors or the bullpen?
Well, I would say making three errors in the ninth inning is about as ugly as you can get, especially when, like, two of them were, like, extremely routine plays. But again, like, I don't know if he even should be in the game at that point. So, like, I don't know who's really at fault here. I mean, obviously he could have made the plays, but, like, the bullpen looks better, too, if that game ends on the first ground ball rather than the fourth.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I think, like, that was just so, it was like cosmic. Although it was like watching a Greek tragedy unfold where you're like, oh no. And you know what's going to happen because you read the Cliff's Notes, but you're still like, oh no, maybe he won't get his eyes pecked out by birds. And then it happens anyway. I don't know. I haven't read any Greek tragedies in a long time. I assume there's eye pecking.
Yeah, that was my main concern after the air.
It just,
like, oh, a bird is coming for sure to peck his eyes out.
Did it really seem like it was completely out of the realm of possibility at that point? Because you knew that when it was a mixture of, like, shock and disbelief. Like, I could not believe it was happening. But at the same time, I was like, but of course this is happening.
I mean, it's just excellent, like, fatherly foresight by Jay Bruce to know that, like, we're gonna need these runs for later, so I'm gonna hit an extra 3-run homer right now.
Yes, Jay Bruce is the dad we all deserve.
Yeah, man, just the dinger dad.
Dinger dad.
It's been, I think the defense has been ugly, and like the thing with the defense is like you can see it getting better because like Kyle Seager will eventually come back, and Kyle Seager makes probably 90% of the plays that
90 that's low. I feel like that's,
well, I was like, I don't know, yeah. Like probably he has maybe one error this year as opposed to the collective like 5 or 6, maybe even 7 that Dylan Moore and Ryan Healy have combined for, right? Like Healy has airmailed a throw last night. Like he missed a couple different grounders. He made a bad throw in the day before's game to, you know, for what could have been a double play.
Something I forgot was that, like, with shifts, that Ryan Healy would be playing essentially second base. Like, in Japan, he was playing where the second baseman plays and had to start a double play and just biffed it completely. And I was like, oh, man, he's, like, not qualified for third base, not even remotely qualified for second base. I guess that's why they probably want Dylan Moore to be in there, because he can play infield, but he just had the night from hell, which I'm worried is going to have, like, lingering effects, maybe. Like, if it's the ninth inning and he's at third base again and a ball is hit at him, like, I can imagine the bad feelings are going to start to creep up. Not even just for him, but for me, who I'm more concerned about.
As we as we said in the in our discussion after the game, like, well, you know, Edgar Martinez had, like, three errors or even four errors, I think, in one game. And he is a Hall of Famer now, so not known for his defense necessarily, but he got over it and played, like, some pretty respectable defense. Like, you know, it's,
and he was a solid defender in the outset of his career.
He was pretty much fine, and I think Dylan Moore is, like, he's pretty much fine. I've watched him make plays in spring training that are not, that are harder than the ones he's biffed on. It's just, it's a little bit of the yips, I think. It's a little bit of, like, this is a guy who really didn't have probably as much time in the minors as he should have had. And
I mean, he's also not played third base very much, right? I mean, yeah. Like, he's spent a fair amount of time, like, in both Texas and Atlanta throughout the minors, but he's been a shortstop mostly. And he's a pretty good shortstop, but ball comes at you a little quicker and a little different. And, yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, it's, I mean, as far as the range goes, he's just, so yeah, I mean, Dylan Moore, having never played a major league game, had not played above Triple A, where he only had, do we know what, oh, because he was split between Double A and Triple A last year, so he really only has 325 plate appearances at Triple A. Like, that's just, that's a very, guys always talk about how much faster the game goes, right? So, and
yeah,
you are right,
see that.
He had 1,000 innings at Double A as shortstop in 2017. So,
yeah.
At the plate too, his bat speed looks like it could use a lot of help. Like, he's, like, missing on 92 right down the middle, and you're like, yeah. I don't know if that's what you were expecting. Like, if you're a sitting fastball, it's down the middle at 92, and you miss it. Like, I don't know what pitch you're gonna hit. So that was a little concerning too.
He's so little is the thing. Like, he just he's extremely little, and the trade-off to that is he's supposed to be, like, a Romine level defender, right? Romine was a decent defender, yeah. For all the pain of watching him at the plate. Like, he was not bad. He was not gonna kill you out there. And
no,
I mean they must have seen something in Dylan Moore that they were exciting, but maybe, you know, step back season, we'll roll the dice, we'll see if this is something we can do. But I'm just shocked that they didn't think that they could, like, sign him to a minor league deal or somehow be able to expose him to waivers. Maybe they could do it now and try to keep
him. I mean,
him
they can still send him down, right? Because it's his first call. So he's got three options.
Oh, yeah, he's got options. Then why did we put him on a minor? Why did we give him a major league deal?
I mean, I think it was so that they could get him, right? Because otherwise he would have probably gone somewhere else, so they specifically wanted him.
Very mysterious. He is very, very slight, and there's just not a ton of power that's going to come out of that frame. You know, he's, as I say all the time, very narrow-hipped. not a lot of lower half power. Like, and it is concerning to me, as Matthew said, that you would hope at least for kind of a whippy bat that, you know, and some speed to beat out some infield singles, but that has so far not. He's struggling. He's really, really struggling, and it's going to be a test of the team to see how they can kind of pull his season out of a little bit of an early nosedive.
Yeah, it was fun watching that game on Saturday with a friend and being like, batting seventh, Dylan Moore, and he goes, who? And then batting eighth, Tom Murphy, and he's like, this is a joke. This is not real. But, like, they ended up playing a huge role in that game. I mean, Moore, obviously, in kind of a bad way, but then Tom Murphy with the frame job heard around the internet on the ninth inning slider from Rumbelow.
Yeah, do we want to, I mean, we were supposed to be in the bad and the ugly, but do we want to briefly address Tom Murphy, who maybe might not make the good list on his own?
Yeah, I'm pretty neutral on Tom Murphy. I don't have a real opinion on him. He's not David Freitas, I guess, but I like David Freitas, so.
We are big David Freitas stands around here, but, so I was, like, really prepared to dislike Tom Murphy just on principle, on David Freitas loving principle, but I am pleased with his ability to adapt quickly to the staff, and as John pointed out, he has, that frame on the Rumbelow pitch was not just, like, a good frame, it was this lower leg nutcracker-esque crab kick thing that he did to get the ball into a position mm-hmm. where the home plate umpire could see it very clearly. And mm-hmm. That's a lot of athleticism behind the plate that we have just not had. Mm-hmm. Bless you, Mike Zunino, but, like, exceptionally agile is not the phrase I would use for him. So I'm coming around on Tom Murphy, and if he could be like a capable backup, I would feel better about the pitching staff, because I don't feel great about Narvaez's framing or defensive abilities.
It is at best gonna be a process for I think Narvaez to grow. There's going to be a lot of work, especially with, like, his flexibility and his athleticism. Murphy's got some talent. He's got, you know, he's a reasonably high draft pick, and he's always hit pretty well in the minors, other than the year where he was injured. So, you know, this is the kind of guy. I guess the thing is, like, we just talked about Dylan Moore, who is a player who doesn't have all that much upside, you wouldn't think. Whereas Murphy is a little bit more of, like, could flame out, but could pop a little bit more. And typically when you're a team looking to sort of step back and find, you know, a little bit more in an off season, you want more guys like Murphy, in terms of guys who could, you know, if you're going to be bad with the potential for being great. Don't just be an okay amount of bad.
Yes. I think that I like the idea of putting Murphy in as a defensive replacement late in games. Like, let Omar go out there and club some dingers, possibly. get some runs on the board and build the healthy lead, and then put Murphy in to handle the bullpen, which is frankly terrifying, and we should talk about it, because that is, if we're looking for the bad, I think you'd mm-hmm. be hard-pressed to name anything other than the bullpen as the bad. Which member of the bullpen makes you feel the worst when they're about to come in?
Oh, boy.
Who do you really not want to see warming up? Because, I mean, there are a lot. It is easier for me to count the guys that I am actually like, oh, phew. Than it is for me to, yeah, it's few and far, like, let's face it, it's Brandon Brennan, right? It's Brandon Brennan, who,
and,
what
and
a Rowenis. Pleasant surprise.
I like Rowenis.
Yeah, I would say Rowenis.
Yeah. Rowenis is throwing 95 now.
Yeah, Rowenis is, like,
when he's
95, 96. Yeah, when he's standing on his feet.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And,
but
like,
yeah,
the change-up's looking good. Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty rough. I trust Chasen Bradford to throw strikes.
Yep.
Which
apparently is the bar. That's the bar. Yeah. Like, can you throw strikes is the bar. And congratulations, Chasen,
yeah.
for being above that.
Yeah. I still like Corey Guerin. I think there's a good sort of Sergio Romo-type player in there. But it was pretty brutal to watch him.
I will agree.
Incapable of finding the strike zone.
That was awful. He's certainly not that bad, but it definitely hurts, too, that his pace is just glacial.
Glacial. Unbelievable.
Unbelievably slow.
Unbearably bad.
My father, not a noted baseball analyst by any means, but he has made Corey Guerin his enemy mostly because he loves, like, you know, catch and throw, like, get it and rip it. But, and Corey Guerin, he pointed this out to me and I'd not noticed it, but Corey Guerin, like, takes a minute before he pitches and he kind of casts his eyes to the heavens. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, I get this sense, like, was there a quantum leap situation happening here where, like, somebody has jumped into Corey Guerin's body and it's not somebody who knows how to pitch baseballs and it's just like, all right, here goes nothing. Every single time.
Oh, interesting. You think it's like a Freaky Friday thing where someone's inhabiting his body and it's not actually Corey Guerin?
Yes. Like every minute before he pitches, like whenever he takes the mound, it's someone who has all of Corey Guerin's like ability and strength, but no knowledge of what, like, I guess I just kind of throw it up there.
Yeah.
Can anyone help me around? Any idea? Okay.
Yeah, it's like Freaky Friday, where she's trying to play the guitar, but she doesn't know how to, so she's just faking it. I'm going to have to look for that now. That's my new angle when watching Corey Guerin. Is this man an imposter?
Yes, Corey Guerin imposter syndrome. I will say that, like, the mantra that I repeat to myself when I watch Corey Guerin pitch is, first of all, he's very nice as a person. I like him as a person a lot. He has a very charming Instagram account where he takes really nice photos. He's very into Seattle. He's a very adorable mini bull. And I just have to remind myself how infuriated it must make Manfred to watch Guerin pitch. Like, he is literally Rob Manfred's worst nightmare. And so I love the idea that he's actively shaving time off Manfred's life every pitch he throws.
Yeah, anything that can be done to spite Rob Manfred, I'm all for, but yes. I don't want to watch the Mariners play five-hour games, so we're going to have to find kind of a middle ground
there. A middle ground on that. So, yes, Corey Guerin had a rough outing. He's almost assuredly not as bad as he seemed in that outing, but the pace he works at does make him extra painful. Is there anyone else who really just strikes fear into your heart when he enters from the bullpen and not in a good way?
Zach Roscup does not. I mean, we knew he would not inspire a ton of confidence. It's a guy who has very little actual MLB time, in part because of his role as a loogie, in part because of his injury
health
history.
Issues, yeah.
He's looked good at some points, but he also has struggled to find the zone. And seeing him face Mike Trout last night was
gosh,
absolutely terrifying, even if it was functionally an unintentional intentional walk. So, yeah, that was... I mean, that it's this the whole crew. The whole crew is a bunch of dice rolls, and it is... I mean, Amanda wrote about this on the site this week, and as someone who grew up with the 90s bullpens of the Mariners, which were, you know, gifted many leads by their prolific offense, and Randy Johnson or, you know, Jeff Vassero or Jamie Moyer, but plenty of reasonable starters doing a good job and not hanging on to those or making it terrifying when they did hang on to it.
Yes. So. Yeah, it's a fun throwback, I guess, for some people. It is exciting, but also
classic Mariners can't get away from the 90s. Reliving the glory days.
That's harsh. I gotta go with Nick Rumbelow, who we know is not a favorite of mine.
I believe you suggested using a sort of gimmick game on a carrier boat to kick him into the ocean last podcast.
Yes, last podcast.
How have your feelings progressed?
I would now like the ocean to be much colder.
Even after his one unbelievable buckle down?
He did have that one shining moment, and then he had another moment where he gave up a Mookie Betts home run.
Everyone gives up a Mookie Betts home run.
Yeah. His disturbing propensity to give up the long ball remains terrifying to me.
Well, they're using him against, like, elite hitters, too. Like, he gave up the home run in Japan to Matt Chapman, and everyone was like, why is he pitching to Matt Chapman?
Yeah.
And then, like, Mookie Betts also. Like, in the Saturday game, the Dylan Moore game, I guess they didn't really have any other option. They had to get a new pitcher in there. But it's like, all right, kid, you get Martinez and Bogarts. Good luck. Like, he hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities to, like, fatten up against the 7, 8, and 9 hitters. I think these White Sox and Royals series might help the bullpen's confidence. Just being able to face kind of bad or inexperienced hitters, I'm sure, is better than the Red Sox and A's. So that's something to look for. But, yeah, I really only trust Brandon Brennan, which is a wild sentence, and Rowenis in short doses. Everyone else is giving me, like, a lot of bad feelings, and, like, I don't want to be watching this game. Like, when the bullpen is in, that's when I'm, like, doing stuff around the apartment, like, cleaning things or, like, getting a snack, because I don't really want to be engaged on every single pitch. It's not fun or good for your health.
No, it's extremely terrifying. I would like to see David McKay pitch, and obviously probably he was not going to get a shot in the Red Sox games. The only one I think it would have been conceivable to put him in was the first one, and that was before he was even officially on the roster. So I'm hoping that this Angels series, if the game tonight goes sideways one way or the other, he gets a shot, and if not, you know, he'll probably get a shot in up on this upcoming road trip. But I'm really curious to see what he has and if the stuff will play at the major league level, because it sure looked pretty good against upper minors competition so far. So, but yes, it is. And now we have a new member of the bullpen in, I will not call him Sad Sack. I will not call him Sad Sack. Connor Zadzik. Zadzik? Zadzik.
Zadzik? I feel like he should just have, like, more Z's in his game. He needs to lean into it.
Yeah.
I think he will fall into the sort of Rumbelow category of guys who have the talent to be high leverage pitchers, but are going to have to figure out how to get to that talent in before our eyes this year, and it is not always going to be pretty. Yeah. You could throw...
Before our very eyes.
You could throw Gerson Bautista in that group as well once he comes back from his lat strain. I mean, Sadzik is huge. Like, he's 6'7". He throws... He averages 97 on his fastball. He's... he touches 100. He's got a slider and a curveball, which collectively are another 10 miles per hour apart. So, like, there's the separation and the movement is there. The command has never been, whether he's been a starter or a reliever, mm-hmm. and he's 27 still, mm-hmm. so he's not, you know, I mean, a lot of relievers don't really figure it out until this point in their careers, but we're going to have to watch him figure it out in
real time.
Because he's out of options.
Meaningful things. So. Yeah, that'll be.
Yeah.
All right. Here's why I am bullish on Connor Zadzik.
Oh, you've come around. You were
No, no, no. I'm still not a fan. I liked Grant Anderson a lot, and I thought he could be a really fast moving bullpen piece. Mm. And if the team is like selling off pieces of the farm to kind of compete this early, that upsets me, because, like, I just don't feel like we ain't played no one yet. Because I think the Red Sox might be bad.
Wow.
I don't know.
What did the A's beat them 7-0 last night?
Yeah. I don't know that this is like a buy, though. I mean, like, if you're actually buying a piece, like, you would go for a guy who did not have abysmal numbers last year, right? I mean, this is a, like, buy low on a guy who they have essentially 5 more years of control of, and they think can be good, a year.
I hope it wasn't a desperation move. That is my concern, is, like, I really would not want to give up pieces off the farm that are going to be potentially contributors later on down the road, essentially to do what we've done for the last 3 years, which is, you know, trade off these pieces that should be the team of the future in order to kind of prop up a staggering big league club. Like, that's not what I was promised out of this year. I was promised the 1 year the kids would stay on the farm. So that is a little troubling to me. But Sadzik is coming out of the Rangers organization, and I don't feel like the Rangers are awesome at development, and certainly not pitcher development. John, is that something that you would agree on?
They have a significant issue with their pitching development recently, and I'm not going to say like it's an identifiable issue. They just have had no success in developing pitchers in a homegrown way.
Not an identifiable
and it's one that is like glaring and talked about at this point. Yeah, they've got a couple guys who are decent now in the minors. Hans Kraus, I believe it is.
I love Hans Kraus.
Yeah,
what a weirdo. And,
but like a year or two ago, like Yoander Mendez was a like top 25, maybe top 50 prospect in baseball, and like was very talented, all these things, but like kept having the knock of like, well, but hasn't like actually gotten his command down and hasn't really fully refined things, but like he's so young and he'll be okay, and like has taken a serious step back and now is being looked at as a reliever, and like, yes, you could make those same if you're a savvy listener, you might say, hey, that's the same thing Justice Sheffield is getting knocked for, which is true, but like this is like the eighth in a row time that the Rangers have had this happen with a pitching prospect. So it's not been their forte, even though they've been successful at getting these really great athletes into.
And I mean, that's kind of that's been the typification of a Rangers prospect for the past several years. It's someone who is almost like what the Angels are doing with their position players. Someone who is high risk, but very high ceiling. You know, you have Gallo, you have Mazzara, like the fireballing pitchers, like they've really gone big. But in several of them, they have also kind of not panned out. And you see Jurickson and Profar in the A's organization. It's pretty interesting to me to see, like, he already looks like a much more capable major leaguer than he ever did while he was in Texas. So I cast many aspersions upon. Oh, yes. He does look good in that yellow. I cast many aspersions upon Texas's development system. So that is one thing that I think I feel a little. That is one thing that I feel a little.
They lost Scott Service. That's all this.
Maybe. What if the real friend. What if. The real Scott Service was the friends we made along the way. No, I can't make that work. Anyway, let's move on.
let's go to the good.
Let's go to the good.
We've
yes.
lingered here in this sort we've, of un- unpleasant valley, but really, this was an unbelievable weekend.
Yes.
I mean, which continued into Monday. I mean, we're recording this Tuesday morning, but holy shit, y'all. Like, I had confidence there would be interesting things this week. You know, in this team, but I was so confident, like, it would be pretty, that it was going to be a drag to start out here, and that, like, by, like, May or June, we'd get Justice, and we'd get J.P. Crawford, and we'd finally get some things that were more interesting. But this is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'm kind of crossing streams here, but this first weekend of baseball was kind of how I felt about the entire Seahawks most recent season, where it was like I was fully prepared for like 6-10 or 7-9, mm-hmm. and they just made the playoffs. And I don't think the Mariners are going to make the playoffs, but it was that same feeling of like sitting down to watch a game, not expecting much, kind of expecting to hate it, honestly, mm-hmm. and then good things coming out of it, which is like, to me, that's the best
money.
Kind of sports joy is when it's unexpected.
Yeah.
Like when you're like, when your team is favored to win and then they win, it's always more of a relief than like actual joy. And this was, that whole Red Sox series was just like a fever dream, but in a good way. Like a fever dream where you have like a fun one and not like a demon showing up.
I think you can see a lot of that conversely too in how miserable Red Sox fans were about it. I almost feel like they were more miserable than we were joyful. Like, mm-hmm.
I hope so.
I guess you have, like, high expectations when you have won the World Series, and this is certainly their window for competition. They just handed out a lot of money to Sale. They just handed out a lot of money to Bogarts. But I was looking ahead at what they're going to be paying players in 2021, 2022, and, like, it is rough. They're going to have $100 million plus tied up in about four players, so...
They just extended Xander Bogarts. Like, yeah, it's a real big bet on this core that is, if they can't keep Mookie Betts, it's going to be a real dicey operation.
Yeah.
And oh, man, this is my favorite conversation of all time. Thinking of all the ways the Red Sox could just crater is my love language. I love this.
Matthew, do you have, like, an especial dislike of the Red Sox? I mean, I dislike the Red Sox mostly because, you know, the fans and they're obnoxious, blah, blah. I'm sure there are plenty of lovely ones out there, but I have not encountered any or many of them at T-Mobile Park or Safeco or otherwise. So is there something fueling this?
It's a combination of many factors. It's the thing that you said, like, their fans are not my favorite. I could never in my life get myself to, like, root for a Boston sports team. And that, you know, even, like, the Bruins, I'm like, I don't want them to have any success. And I don't particularly care about the NHL that much. But it's also a lot of them just being the, like, they've been the bully in my life. Like, they've won four World Series since 2004. The Yankees have won one in that time, and that was, like, kind of a fun Yankees team. So I don't know, the Red Sox to me are just, like, they're the Patriots in baseball. Like, they win a lot and their fans suck, and, like, that's pretty much it. I don't have, like, the lovable loser trope is completely gone with the Red Sox, at least for me, and sort of my generation of people who grew up with them being, like, truly dominant. And it's annoying to me when their fans are like, oh, nobody believed in us. And it's like, everyone is picking you to win the World Series. You have, like, seven elite players. Like, just relax. You know what I mean? That's my main thing with Red Sox and Boston sports fans. Like, just relax every now and again, and maybe I wouldn't hate you. And they're
so
annoying
those of
in
you
the
keeping
park
a tally at home, we have another Matthew Roberson impression.
That one wasn't great,
Boston,
honestly.
Boston for it's all right. It's early. You're workshopping it. That's fine.
I got it. Comes out just on certain words, like Xander friggin' Bogarts is really Xander, fun to say.
I heard a guy say basically that exact sentence at, or phrase at T-Mobile this weekend, and I was not sure if he was, like, imitating a Red Sox fan or was actually, I mean, he was a Red Sox, he was wearing the jersey and everything, but I wasn't sure if he was, like, kind of doing a send-up of the accent or if that was literally his accent, and I really wanted to chase him down and ask, but I value my face, so.
I mean, say what you want about Xander, he's no Noma, that's all I'm gonna say.
The Red Sox might not be good, which does make me worry about whether or not this club is good.
I think that was a good baseball team.
I think the Red Sox are very good.
It is a good offensive team. It is a good offensive team. JD Martinez.
Yeah, the Sale thing was, like, kind of concerning. I mean, if you're a Red Sox fan, I loved it, but.
Well, and, like, Eovaldi is good. Like, it, you know, like, the, even if it's they weren't having great days, like, they were hitting 96 to 98 and 90, like, 2 to 95 from the left side. Like, this is not, like, cheap stuff that they were eating up on. Like, Eduardo Rodriguez is a solid pitcher. Like, they've just been dumpstering everyone that they've been, you know, getting a look at. I mean, it's been last year, the offense was so exhausting in many ways, in part because they had this inability to take teams deep.
Yes.
In counts, they were. I don't know if this stat is even recorded somewhere. I'm sure it could be, but I would bet that the Mariners, that starting pitchers went the longest against the Mariners of probably any team in baseball because they...
The at-bats were so quick. I mean, it was D, just like 1, 2, 3, gone. Or yeah. D, 1, pop fly, gone.
Yeah, and like Ryan hacked a lot. And, yeah. and like so the Mariners didn't strike out very much, and they didn't walk very much. And they... That can work. Like, the Red Sox were like that. The Red Sox walked more than the Mariners, but they don't strike out very much, and they do most of their damage through contact, but the contact wasn't very good a lot of the time. And the Red Sox, last year especially, like, their contact was great. And at least this weekend, like, the Mariners have been walking plenty, but also their contact has been fantastic. Like, we've seen it from Healy, from Santana, from Beckham. Beckham's... Every single time he's making contact with the ball, he's hitting it out in front of the plate. Oh. He's hitting it to center. He's hitting it to left. Like, these are... It's unrecognizable, even from the guys who are returners. It's such a better approach. Like, Healy has been driving the ball... I mean, he's still doing most of his damage by pulling, but, like, he's driven multiple balls the opposite way with, like, some force. And it's... I mean, I feel... worked up about this, but it's actually, it's so delightful to watch a team have a completely about-face approach that makes every aspect of their offense better.
I think even just D and Ryan taking more pitches and going deeper into counts mm-hmm. is fascinating. I know that we were like, just that seems to make such a, it lengthens the lineup when you're up there longer. You know, the game on Sunday, they did not make a Red Sox pitcher other than Brazier, whatever, however you say it, who was just throwing fire and who hadn't really been used in the season because the, or in the series because the games were like such blowouts. They made every other pitcher throw at least 20 pitches in their innings. And wow. To me, that stat was unbelievable. The Red Sox pitchers threw 171 pitches over their, whatever, 8 innings of work. And the Mariners pitchers threw less in an inning more of work. I think a lot of times when we talk about C the Z, there is a great emphasis on C the Z this year, and that's great. Just the plain counting stats don't seem to so far indicate that this team is better than, well, I think they're better than 2017, obviously, but that they were better than 2016, the early push of See the Z. But I think you can't look at See the Z as just counting walks and strikeouts, because this team is still striking out a fair amount. They struck out a lot in that Padres exhibition series. They struck out a lot on Sunday, the game that they won. They're going to strike out, but just having those long plate appearances, I want there to be a way that we can quantify that.
QABs. I mean, that's sort of, I don't know how many, I think a lot of people who play baseball or softball are probably familiar with the concept of a QAB, a quality at bat, but it's essentially, it's something that the Mariners take very seriously. I think they maybe have their slightly different... What's the term that they have for the, it's like the competitive at-bat chart, or like the competition?
Yeah, the productive team plate appearance.
Yes, the PTPA. Yeah, yep. So the Mariners call it a productive team plate appearance, but it's a very similar concept to the quality at-bat statistic, which is just that you either get a walk or a hit-by-pitch or a hit, and that those all count as quality plate appearances, but also either a 6 or 7 pitch at bat, whatever happens after that, it still counts as a quality plate.
It's
appearance.
A 7. I'm pretty sure it's a 7 pitch at bat.
Okay. Yeah. So the idea that you're not always going to get on, but if you're making the pitcher work, you are still ultimately having a productive at bat, and that benefit trickles down to the rest of the team, because that pitcher is a little bit more tired. That pitcher has, you know, used more energy. They have to go to the bullpen earlier. They have to get more bullpen guys used earlier in the series. They can't go to their better guys as often. So, I mean, all of that, it's incremental stuff, but if everyone on the team is doing a good job of it, it absolutely comes through. And whether that ultimately you know, sticks as a season-long thing, I don't know. I would pump the brakes on that. But at even just seeing it for a week's worth of games, essentially, is so refreshing out of the gate here.
Yeah, and, like, they're not the best team in baseball at taking a walk, but they're in the top 10. They're not the best team in baseball at so far at not striking out, but they're in the top 10. You know, if they can just come reasonably close to the, and then they're, you know, the third best team by slugging, by ISO, behind the Phillies and the Dodgers, who are obviously going to hit, you know, 80 bazillion home runs. Mm-hmm. So that, it's really, I know that a lot of us, oh yeah, and they're also the best team in baseball at stealing bases and base running, which is also very exciting.
So I mean, like last night, there have been two, maybe three different plays where either D or Malik has stolen a base, the throw has gone into center field, and then they've immediately just blitzed down to third base. And, like,
yes,
that's such a just invigorating thing for your offense to score runs, you know, especially when you have guys who make contact in a productive way coming up after that, like Santana and, you know, Malik and Mitch even. Yeah, anyway.
I was not ready for how fast Malik is.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And he has, like, 80 grade, looks cool while running hair. Like, his hair is so cool. It kind of reminds me of, like, a macaroni penguin, but in a good way. You know what I'm talking about? Those penguins with, like, the blonde hair on top? Okay, people at home will know what I'm talking about. But it's very similar to that look, which I'm into. That's not meant to be a dig at Malik. But, yeah, it's been really fun to, like, have a guy get on base and then realize, like, oh, he can be on third base in, like, 20 seconds.
Oh, my God, it is a macaroni penguin. I just Googled it. This is 100% the look.
Yeah, they're out here. They're pretty common. On the C to Z thing, by the way, I don't have numbers to back this up, but just in the first 7 games or whatever, it feels like, just from watching, that the Mariners are swinging at the right pitches more often. Like, they're not, like, swinging at garbage, and, like, they're definitely, like, kind of early in the counts, they're, like, keyholing the strike zone. I mean, like, I'm only going to swing if it's where I want it rather than just swinging because it's in the zone. I know that in his very incendiary MLB Network interview, Tim Beckham was talking about how that's been his approach, like, just trying to hit the pitches he wants in the zone and, like, being aggressive while also being selective in the zone. Like, if this pitch, if it's the first pitch and it's where I want it to be, I'm going to swing at it, but I'm going to be selective in that, like, I'm not going to swing at a strike just because it's a strike. So that was kind of cool to hear.
I have the numbers for you.
Yeah,
the
Mariners got great news for you.
Hell yeah. Give it to me.
John and I both raced to FanGraphs, apparently.
You bet we did.
Do you want to? You can go ahead, John.
No, you lead.
Yeah, validate me. Either one of you.
The Mariners have the best O swing, so swinging outside the zone. They have the best mark in the majors right now, leading the Braves by almost a full point.
Wow, I'm so good at watching baseball.
23%, 23.8% of the time are they swinging at pitches outside of the zone, which is, at least thus far, a dramatic improvement over last year where they were doing so 31.1% of the time. And I would anticipate this will not last because no team did that last year. Like, the lowest was the Dodgers at 27.2. But it's still absolutely, I mean, it's a great point that, like, they're not chasing. They are actually making teams come to them. And perhaps that will have to shift as the book changes a little bit and as teams adjust and realize, oh, these guys aren't being complete morons as they, like they were last year.
Yes.
But
that's true.
Being the team that is making other teams have to adjust is pretty good.
Much more preferable to, oh, hey, it's Ryan Healy. Why don't we just throw him some garbage? And he is, I think, to my mind, been the biggest benefactor of just literally laying off a couple of pitches and then getting his pitch to hit. And it turns out when Ryan Healy gets a good pitch to hit and doesn't go chasing after garbage, really fun things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to me for being right about that, by the way.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You have been a Ryan Healy stan from day one.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that part. I meant the O-swing thing, just that hunch that I had being backed up by numbers.
But yes, also, yes, the eye test works, everyone.
Yeah, scouts, if you're listening, I'm out here. I'll write some reports for you.
Let's talk about, while we're riding this wave of good feelings, who is your guy? Who do you love? Who is that any different from what it was over spring training?
I have a trio of guys.
Yeah.
Greedy.
It's fine. Well, I don't know. They just love each other so much. And I love that. All right. One of them is old, not old, but like on the team last year, D. Gordon. And then Tim Beckham and Malik Smith are just like really everything I wanted in these new players, where it's like, yeah, they're playing well, but they also like being on the Mariners, which is such a refreshing change of pace to some of the things we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
And they seem to like each other, which I also, like, I feel like that 100% matters. Anyone who's played sports or even just had a job knows that you like things better if your coworkers are cool. So As long as they're on good terms with each other, I'm on good terms with them. Like, that interview that I mentioned earlier on MLB Network was just so great. Like, Tim Beckham's doing the interview, and then D just comes up and takes the headset off of his head to offer his thoughts. And then you see Malik Smith run from the outfield and be like, oh, I want to be in this too. And like, that's just cool. Like, it's so nice to see the Mariners, like, having a good time. And, like, also another, like, underlying thing here is this might not last very long. So, like, enjoy it while it's here. Like, I don't know if July and August are going to have the same vibes. So we might as well just sort of bask in the Tim Beckham player of the week, player of the month, player of the century thing that's going on right now.
Yes, it has absolutely. It's just been so fun, and you just have to lean into the fun. And like you said, you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So just love this swagger that I think, you know, we had D, and D was like kind of a one-man show last year as far as the fun goes. And this year we've tripled that. Like, we have triple the fun, triple the swag.
Yeah.
And that has been exciting to me. And just, like you said, just watching that friendship kind of grow amongst all of them. And I think Tiffany, who is on Twitter at Rocked Faces and is a lovely person, pointed out the thing that she really appreciates about D. Gordon is, like, he hopped into that interview to do a very D thing, which is like, no matter how much you are appreciating my teammates, it's not enough. Like, you must appreciate them more. And I just think that's so, I just got so excited that I knocked into my coffee cup and spilled coffee everywhere. That's what D. Gordon does to me.
Yeah, and I think his fun quotient will only increase if he's playing well, which he is so far. I mean, he looks healthy, which is, I think, one of the main reasons why last season went south for him, is because he wasn't right. So I think, like, if he can hit and be around his guys, like, it'll just be like D. Gordon at his peak entertainment value.
Absolutely.
My guy last week was Domingo Santana, and I am not doubling down, but like quadrupling down on that. I mean, obviously he played really well this past weekend, but like there are a lot of players I think that are either power hitters or they are contact hitters, and there are sort of some elite guys who, like Mookie Betts is one, Trout obviously, J.D. Martinez, even, just from players we've played against so far, the Mariners have seen, who are guys who can do contact and hit for power. And I don't think that Domingo is quite, you know, he still strikes out a fair amount, but the way that he makes contact with the ball and the way that he swings is unlike, it's so fascinating to watch. His sort of inside out, like, wrist control swing from such a massive guy that.
And yet, it's
he
sort
really
of
does.
Like it, I was saying. I said this in my radio spot earlier today on Education Radio. Ho-ho. But he. not so much a flex. I'm not. Also, that's me like actually thinking about doing any physical activity. Like, oh, flexing sounds like it would hurt me. You see, guys, like Bellinger has that violent uppercut, right? Mm-hmm. Harper, mm-hmm. Domingo, he swings and it looks effortless, and then you look and the ball's like 10 rows deep.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the like. Some I've seen a few people mention this about Cano in Cano's swing, that Cano has this effortless power, right? He's got this swing that he's always essentially like he's sort of guiding the ball back to where it should be going.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's convincing the ball, no, you meant to be going to the right field seats this time. Like no, you wanted to be a like laced line drive down the left field line, and like. Aesthetically, they're very different swings, but Domingo's ability to sort of see a pitch on the outside part of the plate and say, oh yeah, I should hit this for a line drive down the right field line. Of course I'll do that. And then get a fastball like inside and say, oh, I'm going to crank this into the upper deck. Of course. It's such an unbelievable athleticism, such incredible mechanics.
That's Edgar Martinez, right? Edgar Martinez was like, oh, the ball is here, so I should put it here.
Yeah.
And he said that like it was the simplest thing in the world. Like, oh, the ball's on the inside, I will put it to right field. The ball is out, I will put it over here. And it's his ability to hit to all fields, I think, is awesome. But yeah, I would love even more Edgar and Domingo time together. Excited to see how that relationship grows.
And I just... The sort of the last thing is, like, you guys talked about Malik and Dee and Tim Beckham, and I think it's really true that the I mean, we've all talked about how, like, we want the Mariners to have good players, but also that it certainly accentuates our enjoyment of and fandom when we're watching players that seem to get along well and seem to enjoy themselves and seem to be genuinely pleasant people. And just, like, watching Domingo Santana like in last night or in Monday's game slide pretty goofily into the corner to make a catch, get up like grinning, sort of laughing at himself for how like ridiculous the slide was, and then get a massive hug from Felix in the dugout. Like, that's exactly what I want my baseball fandom to be like. We can analyze, and I love analyzing all the details, but like, that's what I want from watching the team. Is like, I want the team to be making great plays and then see them enjoying that experience, and that is so cool to have watched this first week here. Kate, who's the person that stood out? You cannot pick any of ours, though.
No,
I
will not.
Some good ones.
I am going to stay on the joy train and say...
The glee train.
And I'm going to say that the person who's bringing me the most joyful glee is Brian Healy, who was worth a staggering negative 0.8 FOR last year.
Yeah.
And is
he was worse than Ichiro.
Already worth 0.5 FOR. So that is really exciting. Last year, his walk rate was 5.2%. He has already increased that by an entire percentage point, so just keep doing that. And he has cut his K percentage so far down by another 10 points. So
got
like
that cool 4.414 ISO. Just like
just cat. Surely that's sustainable.
He has one non-extra base hit this year.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and everyone was so bummed because it like broke the streak.
It broke his streak.
Like, well, I mean, he still has the game streak.
That's
so
true.
You know. Also, like, I will take Ryan Healy like slapping a single around the field, a shift beater. Like, that to me is really exciting. So I've always loved Ryan Healy, the person. Seeing Ryan Healy, the baseball player, do good things and just the incredible joy that he feels and being able to participate in that joy with him is life-giving. So
yeah, it's nice to see him make adjustments too. Like John mentioned, he went the other way against the Red Sox. Like, he's doing things that I never would have thought he would do last year, like the walks, the laying off pitches, hitting the ball to the opposite field. It's great. And I also really love when he does the pinky grill thing, because he looks so goofy. Like, yeah. And I think he knows it, too. I think he knows it. I think he's, like, leaning in. It's like when, yeah, like, your uncle tries to dab, and you're like, oh, well, that was bad, but we love you. That sort of thing.
Ryan Healy, your goofy uncle, is definitely an energy, I think, you could that he brings.
Yeah, he's it's more of a cousin vibe for me, because he's still kind of young and vibrant. But yeah, that extended family goofy guy who you see only now and again, but he's just like the life of the party. That's Ryan.
Ryan.
Yeah. Should we go to some questions?
Let's do it.
Yes, we got a fair amount of questions. Thank you, as always, to everyone who hit us up on Twitter. I guess we've kind of done this. If you feel like it's too similar, we can kind of skip over it. But we got one from AJ Allen at AJ Allen PDX, and they want to know, who is the first position player to be called up? So we haven't talked about that. And then, who is your unsung hero of the season so far? Someone who isn't getting talked about enough. So let's start with that, the position player to be called up. Obviously, the minor leagues haven't really gotten going yet, but do we have any predictions on who we think is first with a bat to be called up from the minors?
This is a reminder that the minor league season starts April 5th, 4th, whatever Thursday is, 4th, right?
Yes.
That would be the 4th.
Yeah.
Yes, so there's plenty, and the rosters are out, and we're really excited to start following that.
We've got season previews for each team up on the site.
I don't know about the position player, and I think if the team is going as it is, we're not going to see any of them for quite some time, hopefully. But I guess I would maybe say, like, I think they could use a strong defensive outfielder at some point. If Malik's throw looked real wonky the other night, right? That did not look like a healthy throw. So yeah. I might say I'm concerned about Malik's arm and pin it on Braden Bishop. But
yeah, I think if any of the Edwin Encarnacion, Jay Bruce, Ryan Healy, Daniel Vogelbach group get hurt, I think that Bishop would be the first guy to be called up, because that would give them a little more outfield depth, and you're not really losing any positional versatility there. If it's not injury related and it's performance related, I think there's a chance that they could go Shed Long, because, like we've talked about, the defense has not been awesome from Dylan Moore, and you've not been getting a ton from him.
I think that's
so
a good point.
I don't know that they would, unless they actually have consistent play for him, I don't know that they'd call him up for an extended period of time, and I hope they wouldn't, but especially if it was like, I don't know, like either Moore or like, you know, maybe if like Healy took a 10-day DL stint, they might call up Shed Long and say, like, all right, we're going to give you some quick run here at third, and, like, don't worry too much if you fuck it up, but, like, this will be cool.
Oh, man, can you imagine Shed Long, Malik Smith, Tim Beckham, D. Gordon? The sauce of it. You'd be drowning in sauce.
Can't wait. What about an unsung hero? Do you guys have one that maybe we haven't shouted out yet? I know for me it'd probably be Brandon Brennan, just because I was expecting truly the worst to happen. And he's been pretty good. I had never even, like, considered him. Like, I saw his name on the roster and was like, okay, he's on the team. That was it. Like, I was never like, what does he throw? Where did he come from? Like, I knew he was a Rule 5 pick and that his name is Brandon Brennan, and that was it. And then I watched him pitch, and I was like, oh, this might be something. Like, especially for how little we had to sacrifice to get him. It was like, good move, Jerry, at least through 7 games.
I threw some pretty heavy shade because I just could not find anything about him. And I was like, okay, I guess he's going to be on the roster all year. And, I've been really I'm excited. I'm hoping that one of us at some point does a breakdown and looks at what he was doing previously and what he's doing now to see if there have been any adjustments or any change. Because I can't imagine that, like, this dude who has looked so good so far was just kind of hanging out in the... It was the Rock... Wait. Not the Rock. The Rockies wanted him, but he never actually pitched for them.
The Rockies signed him to a minor league deal because the Mariners... The Mariners kind of were shady here, if we're being honest.
Oh, they were 100% shady.
Well, I guess they weren't entirely shady.
It helps the player out in the long run. But yeah, they definitely stole him from Colorado. They outright stole him.
Brennan was a minor leaguer with the White Sox for a long time, reached minor league free agency, signed up. The Mariners wanted to sign him to a minor league deal. He instead chose to sign with
Colorado.
The Rockies.
Why would you do that to yourself, Brendan? Why?
I guess the idea there would be like their
he really
bullpen
likes
is
hiking?
A little sus. Well, and yeah, like yeah, the yeah, bullpen's okay. sus, so like he would have had a good pathway to the majors. So the Mariners instead said, "Okay, fine, we'll Rule 5 draft you. You'll just get to be in the majors," which is better than being in the minors with Colorado, probably. I mean,
on a lot of levels.
Assuredly. Well, I mean, like, on a pay level, on just, like, a general, whatever. But, like, it was, yeah, it was kind of whack. But I think he's a good call. I would say, we talked about Roenis a fair amount, but, like, he's really looked so good. And, like, the changeup has been, like, he's obviously the curveball guy. Like, we know him for his beautiful curveball. And it's still there, but, like, the changeup has made him legitimately tough to hit for righties, and like to the point where like I kind of wouldn't mind seeing them give him some more starts, you know, because like if you have three solid pitches and you have decent command, even if he's dropping down to like 92 to 94, like that's a very good pitcher, you know, for like five innings. So I don't know, whatever they use him for, if as long as he continues to be comfortable, that's been really cool. And he's put out a lot of fires this young season.
Yes. Oh, I have one. Yeah. Matt Festa, I think
call.
Has taken such a big step forward. He was always really solid in the minors, a big strikeout guy, very dominant. I mean, you could just, I feel like sometimes you can get a sense when hitters do not want to face a certain pitcher. And that was the look I saw on everybody's face coming up in Arkansas, having to face Matt Festa. Like, they did not want anything to do with him. And when he got to the majors, it was a little bumpy. Like, it took him a long time to get it to his first strikeout. And I feel like he was still adjusting. And this year, just seeing him at spring training and seeing him out there now, like, he looks like a big leaguer. He carries himself with the confidence of a big leaguer, and he's pitching like he belongs. So I'm really excited to see what else comes for him this year. It's not going to be like a perfectly upward trajectory, but just seeing him get strikeouts against a very good offensive team in Boston is exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good points made by all. I will throw a shout out to Malik Smith's Florida chain as another unsung hero. I love seeing
for
that.
For not stabbing him in the chest yet.
Yeah, I do have some concerns about that because he slides head first all the time. But yes, I mean, he's probably been doing it long
enough
also, that he knows how to avoid getting stabbed.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys, I'm hoping there'll be like some Stranger Than Fiction situation where like the chain blocks a like throw to second and hit him in his helmetless head.
I think his
like,
helmet
otherwise.
Could block a throw for sure. It flies off. Like,
yeah,
I mean, yeah. If tossed off at the right trajectory, but like, because
he's
got to
show
so
off that macaroni penguin hair.
I guess, yeah. It's just like terrifying because like he is head first sliding, and like they showed a slow mo of his slide in Monday's game, and it just like joyfully was like, "I'm free!" Like,
yeah,
it just leapt off his head. So yeah, the chain may have to do some double duty protection wise there, some talisman work.
Okay, next question comes to us from CRT Sports Cards on Twitter. They said, 7 of 162 is an incredibly small sample size, but if this team continues to surprise us, how can DePoto improve the team and at the same time not sacrifice a single prospect? This is an interesting question to me because I think we would all agree, and most Mariner fans would agree, that like there is no reason to give up a prospect for the pursuit of like a couple more wins this year.
And we've already seen them do some light trading off of the prospect side to get Tom Murphy, to get Grant Anderson. So there are a few of these little types of moves. I think it's too early. The Mariners have to, they're obviously not going to sustain this level of success, but if they can just kind of stay relevant in what is shaping up to be a pretty bad AL, they can buy a reliever's contract basically at minimal prospect cost from somebody who maybe thought they were going to be better than they are.
Yeah. The, looking at I don't know, there's a lot of different sort of playoff projections systems. 538 is one of, I would say, the more optimistic ones at times. Certainly not always so conservative, but they do it a different way than some of the other places, which is interesting. Nate Silver obviously invented Pakoda, so you'll get something maybe more like what Baseball Perspective does. Anyway, the Mariners are now projected to be 83-79 by them at this point, based on what they've done, and they have a 27% chance of making the playoffs.
Whee!
which is far better than it was a week ago, obviously. But they're projected to be, they've got much better odds than the Angels, and pretty much worse than most of the other teams in the AL. Like, they're worse than the Twins, and they're worse than the A's. But, you know, they're not a joke team. So I think what Kate said about buying a reliever is probably the likeliest bet. Another way they could go is trading either Jay Bruce or Edwin Encarnacion, or both, and getting sort of a, maybe not shed, essentially not shedding any money, and instead getting either a prospect and a maybe like MLB ready player that fills a different hole, because essentially the Mariners don't really need you know, another player in those spots. They have they're working around having four players for two spots, and they could get a bullpen piece and a prospect, you know, maybe another long-term guy who also helps in the short term, like Tue Vailala was last year, who's, you know, a guy
who's still going to come back at some point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's exactly. That's another thing to keep in mind, is there is Sean Armstrong, Anthony Swarzak, who
we'll
don't know anything
today,
about.
I believe.
That's so soon. Swarzak day already.
Swarzak closer coming into Yamo be there. That'd be the greatest.
I wouldn't expect anything major in that regard, because you're not going to be willing to trade from depth, but that's okay. And the Mariners are in a position where, based on their plan of trying to compete again roughly midway through next year /2021, which we've all said was pretty ambitious, and I still think is pretty ambitious even after 7 good games, getting guys who are in their second or third year in the league and have some talent is still a useful thing to trade for, even if it's sort of a fringy addition. So that's the kind of guy who I think they could go for. Probably it would be more pitching that and less position players in that regard, though, just because they have so many about to arrive pitching or position player prospects at every position.
Yeah. In terms of the veterans, you could definitely see Bruce or Encarnacion for a young pitcher. I think we would all be pretty thrilled with that. Okay, let's go to Jeff M. at TW Owns You on Twitter. Jeff says, what kind of run would the pitcher massacring Mariners have to go on for us to be okay forfeiting a draft pick to sign Keuchel?
Nope.
Don't do that.
Nope.
Don't do that ever.
Nope.
In
don't
any
do
world.
That. No, don't do that. Don't give
I
up
don't
the
want
draft
that.
Pick. We got Cal Raleigh with the third round draft pick last year. I mean, third rounders still turn out to be MLB errors. It's not worth it in a rebuilding year.
Your third highest pick, which would mean it would actually it'd be the second rounder, though. The comp balance is after.
I think it would be the comp balance pick.
So that would not be a good use.
This is not even a third top 100 pick. That's a hard no from us. Moving on.
Here's what I'll say.
If you can sign Keuchel to a deal that is reasonable, and I think that it could happen. Not that I don't think the Mariners would do it, but I think you could theoretically do it. That is still someone that, if the team ends up not in a great situation, you can trade him and recoup decent value, maybe a third rounder level value, or a comp pick value, depending on the player you get. But the reason Dallas Keuchel and the reason Craig Kimbrel haven't signed is because they want multi-year deals, likely 3 to 4 years at least, and that's fine, you know, sure, but if they actually wanted to sign for shorter term deals,
they would have done it.
Yep. and they would just directly do it with a better team than the Mariners. I think the fit is not there for what the Mariners need, and that's okay. It's not going to come around.
Right. And with each passing day, I become more concerned that, like, Dallas Keuchel might not even have that good of a year. Like, it's going to take him a while to, like, get back into, like, you know, MLB pitching shape, I would imagine. Like, he'd probably have to do some rehab starts. So, like, I don't know if I would even want him, because it's just such a risk at this point. Like, he's been in a little bit of a, not a decline, but he hasn't been that pitcher who won the Cy Young. To give up a draft pick for a guy who will maybe be a good starting pitcher this year is not a chance I'm willing to take at all.
Right.
Okay, let's end with this one then. This is from James Roberts at Junk Ball Pitching. Do I have any
one
good
of
reason?
My favorite? We get a fair number of questions from James, and it always brings me glee to hear that handle. That is
absolutely
just on the money.
Junk Ball Pitching, yeah, good work there. Junk Ball Pitching wants to know, do I have any good reason to be cautiously optimistic about the King? I did not see any of Felix's performance. I caught the game last night around the seventh inning, and he was already out. So I'll defer to you guys. Do you have any good reason to be optimistic about Mr. Felix Hernandez?
Sadly, no. Nope. I mean,
and Kate says
I think he's done a better job of mixing in the curveball and kind of responding to the analytics, and he certainly didn't get helped out last night by the error, so yeah. Maybe his performance probably is better than it looked, but I feel like I've been down this road a bunch of times. Like, I get excited about a Felix, and I'm like, he's made changes. It's gonna work now. And then I get disappointed every time. So I am safeguarding my heart against this one.
The pitches were moving a lot last night, which was great. And the command was still suspect. So that's, you know, it's going to be challenging. What's going to happen for him when, against a better hitting team? Because the Angels are a terrible hitting team right now. They have Mike Trout.
Oh, they're like, so bad. Literally, Tommy La Stella.
Like, they don't have Justin Upton. They don't have Ohtani. Like, that lineup is awful right now. Which is, you know, it's still a major league lineup, and he still looked quite solid against it. But, like, he only got 4 swinging strikes. Like, he did a perfectly fine job, and if he can look anything like that, then I think he's going to be all right. But, you know, it will be, you know, Mike Leake ceiling, you know, like kind of thing, and that's perfectly fine. I hope it's a reasonable season for him so that he can justifiably continue playing and continue sort of working his way towards getting, you know, in that Hall of Fame echelon, because I want that desperately for him. But there's nothing that I saw that was like, oh, yeah, he's back. Yeah,
I mean, I'm obviously like everyone in this world that we live in, we're rooting for him, but it doesn't seem logical to think that Felix is going to be anything even remotely similar to what he once was. I think we could be looking at like a, he's not as good as he once was, but he can be as good as he once was once. I fucked up that. You know what I'm saying? We're like, he might have one start this year.
Yeah, it's
like
a good country song.
Yeah. I know I messed up the words, but you knew what I'm saying. I think we're going to get one Felix start this year of like 7 innings, 6 strikeouts, 4 hits, 1 run. And then that's going to be like the swan song. But I don't think that's going to be a normal occurrence at all.
I will say it was really fun to see last night, just the jubilation on his face and how excited he was after and in the game, and he felt good on everyone who made it out on kind of a cold-ish Monday night to the ballpark to see him pitch and support him in the court, because that really seemed to mean a lot to him. And you know, I'm happy for every day like that. Every good day that Felix has makes me happy. So.
Yes, and I am happy that everyone listened to this podcast. Y'all are the best. Thank you for the questions. And for your listenership.
Yes, sorry if we can't get to all of them. As always, we are really working hard on keeping this guy to under an hour. And, you know, we all like to talk, so.
We do like to talk, and we like to entertain you with our terrible takes and, for me, terrible impressions of random things. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Obviously, at Lookout Landing is kind of the main account. Kate is at Once Again to Zelda. John is just at John Troopin. And I, Matthew, am at mroberson22. Give us a follow if you want more of us in your life, which I'm sure a lot of you don't.
Or if you have questions that we didn't get to that you would like to ask directly.
Yeah, or if you want to slide in the DMs. They are extremely open.
Whoa. No, nope, no.
All right, not for Kate. For me, everyone, join. It's a good time.
A real bacchanal in Matthew's DMs.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of state you keep your DMs in, but
oh, they are a wild ride. All right, we should stop talking.
We should 100% stop talking.
Yeah,
and getting those DMs.
No. Yeah. All right. Thank you all so much for
DM all of you.
Thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week, hopefully with more fun things to talk about from this surprising, wildly surprising and wonderful so far club. Talk to you next week. Bye. I'm feeling good and I'm feeling so fine. I'm